The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. A nice-looking, cool Thursday. But, I mean, it is. Hey, that beats a lot of the weather we see in February.
Oh, it's beautiful out. I mean, it is a little bit colder than you might be expecting because you see the sun shining. But it's nice. And you're right, an upgrade over
some of the unforgiving.
I mean, this is what? I mean, they're going to be playing baseball in a little bit more than a week.
Softball starts today. So
that's, I feel that's, like spring, that's, spring's on the way.
That's the way it usually is at the start of the diamond season. So good luck to them. I mean, it's a fun time. You've got the spring sports starting to get going. We're in the midpoint of the college the college conference seasons, or in the second half, really, of conference seasons.
Oh, we're in the home stretch.
We're in the exact midpoint in the SEC, but most conferences are a little past the midpoint.
It feels like this. I mean, February's when, especially if you're talking about regular season conference championship races, like, things start to tighten up. Every game takes on a little bit more importance. And teams, you can feel like every loss, especially, moves you further away from that first place point, and it hurts a little bit more to drop games, moving forward, and not to mention the possibility of playing your way out of the NCAA tournament consideration when you're in major conferences. So that's
part of what Saturday is about. Right, for Auburn. Like, that's part of what's going on Saturday, is that that game against Alabama, and I think this next three or four game stretch for Auburn really could have a lot to say about, is Auburn solidly in the NCAA tournament? Mm-hmm. Is Auburn a bubble team that's worried going into the final few games of the season? Is Auburn out of the NCAA tournament, they need to play their way back in? I think all three of those options, depending on how they're still possible. I think depending on how these next four games go, mm-hmm. like all you know, any of those things could be true. But with extra rest and a home game and some adversity the last time they played, this game Saturday feels enormous. And Alabama just showed that they, as I think some folks thought they were going to be able to.
I thought they would. I figured last night, I mean, I said it may take triple digits, and it didn't exactly take triple digits. They could have won with 98. But, I mean, still, a 197 win last night over Texas A&M in Tuscaloosa. That was a game that matched up better for Alabama, obviously, than the Florida game did. And, Stephen Pearl today, obviously concerned about this Alabama team that comes in, because Auburn can't, I mean, Alabama has times when they're five shooters on the court, and you've got to know where all of them are. You can't leave somebody just wide open.
I tell you, Alabama's a tough team to play if you're only seven deep, too, because that's a team that wants to.
He reiterated that today. Actually, he did correct Brian and said, we play eight.
They play eight.
But the eighth plays 4 minutes a game.
Yeah, Blake plays sparingly when Tahad needs a spell, but I think it's fair to describe Auburn as seven deep at the moment with emergency minutes for Blake, but no, that's a tough strategy. It's a tough strategy against anyone in the SEC, but Auburn's found a way to make it work and win some games lately against good teams. Alabama's a team that's especially tough to play if you're not, especially in the backcourt.
Well,
because of the pace, because of the number of possessions, and because of the way they get you in foul trouble. Like, they can make guards just with that number of possessions, they can put a guard in foul trouble and really put pressure on whether it's the other six guys or the coaches who want to maybe give someone else some playing time.
Yeah, what Auburn's got to do, though, is what they do best, and that's try to be physical, control the backboard, and keep Alabama from having that many possessions. That's one of the things that Stephen Pearl was talking about today. Auburn can't just get out there and run and expect to have, be this a game of 75-80 possessions, Auburn's got to slow things down and be physical and, you know, take advantage when they have the opportunity. It's going to be really interesting. Now we know that Charles Bediako's hearing will be tomorrow. The judge in Tuscaloosa denying the extension. And so we will know beforehand. Really interesting, yeah. Stephen Pearl's comments, and he just sort of went into it himself. He was asked about what Charles Bediako has brought to Alabama, and he went on to say that he feels for Charles Bediako. He says Auburn fans may not like hearing that, but he wonders if Charles Bediako loses tomorrow, then what? What is the future for him? So he said he kind of hopes that Charles Bediako plays against Auburn on Saturday.
Yeah, it's I think you know, we've talked before about like the siren song of professional basketball if you're not ready to make the jump. And a lot of guys with promising careers derail them by leaving college basketball before they should and trying their toe in professional basketball, and it doesn't work out, and then what? And for most, for a very long time, then what was not go back to college.
No, then what is hope you can find something overseas.
Right. And so, yeah.
Or somewhere, you know.
And Charles Bediako and Alabama are challenging the idea that then what should sort of disqualify you from college. And they've drawn comparisons between players who have played professionally for various leagues around the world who have since been given college basketball eligibility. None of those leagues are the NBA.
No. None of those are. And as Seth Davis pointed out today, a lot of those are paying those players basically room and board and not much more than that.
Yeah.
It's not like the European, the big time European professional leagues where these players who don't quite make it to the NBA can have long careers and really make a lot of money doing so.
I'm torn on Bediako because I don't love the idea of joining your team midseason like this and trying to change the rule midstream. At the same time, I don't want to seem like I'm endorsing the system in particular because I do think that there's a conversation to be had about should you be able to declare for the NBA draft and retain your college basketball eligibility.
I don't have a problem with that, but I don't think that you should then go and play and be able to then change your mind and come back. I think, in baseball, and I know it's not the same because there are minor leagues in baseball. There are many more, even though they're fewer than they used to be. Players have the opportunity to go through the draft, and then they don't lose they don't forego their eligibility until they sign a professional contract. And I think it should be the same. That would make sense in all sports. But I think once you've signed a professional contract, especially one that is linked to the teams at the top levels of the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, that's it. Yeah, the thing is, a judge can say he doesn't feel like that's fair, but it's a rule that has been there and was agreed upon by all the members of the NCAA, which are all the colleges and universities. It was agreed upon. That's a rule that has been in place for decades. I am the old man on the porch and get off my lawn, that kind of thing. But it's like it's been a rule and it's been understood. And you knew what you were getting into when you did that. You decided to forego your eligibility when you went ahead and went through the draft. And sometimes you make a decision that you regret later. But in most cases, you don't have an opportunity to get a redo. And I think that's the way this one should be looked at. If Bediako wins this case, then that opens up the door for, you know, for players who have played, the Amari Bailey situation.
Well, the red line that the NCAA says exists right now, as far as they differentiate having signed even a two-way deal, right? A G League and NBA contract. Like they say, that is a disqualifier if you want to play
college basketball. And if Bediako were to win, suddenly that rule is certainly in question, if not out the window. And it sort of raises the question of how many of, like, what other rules about eligibility are they prepared to successfully defend in a court of law? So, yeah, I think it's a pretty important day tomorrow for folks wondering what are their rules, what rules.
Well, there are rules, but do the rules matter?
Yeah,
that's the thing. It's there are definitely rules, and the NCAA has said unequivocally, it's like, no, he's not eligible to play.
But if you're in a country where, like, the government has collapsed, right? Like, are there still, like, I guess there are still rules, right?
Yeah.
But who's enforcing them, right? Like, if the statue has come down, right? And it's like, you don't, like, that. I suppose those are still the rules. But, yeah, it's, no, this the NCAA's ability to defend their rules and enforce their mm-hmm. rules is certainly one of the things that will be tested tomorrow when Bediako gets his day in court.
We'd love for you to join us here on the Thursday drive. We're gonna hear from Ferg at some point.
Yeah, I think we're gonna give him a call 4:30.
Okay, so we'll talk with Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer in a little while. But in the meantime, our phone lines are open 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
Let's get to Spectre.
Hey, Spectre.
You guys say hey. In this case with this guy, you say, then what? Well, he gets out there and gets a job like all of us do.
Or he tries to play pro overseas like so many other basketball players do. I mean, there are a lot of options.
But didn't he try that?
Well, he hasn't necessarily tried going outside of the country. He played professional, you know, he played the
he was
NBA.
Drafted.
Yeah.
And then, assigned to the G League.
Yeah, NBA semi-pro leagues in the United States. You know, you can try your luck in, you know, like there's leagues in Europe, there's leagues in the Middle East. China has a significant league.
I mean,
other countries in Asia.
Some of the frozen spots of the globe have them. I mean, yes, there's professional and pretty good money-making opportunities internationally.
Hey, you know, Bill, you know, you said that we got rules. You know that old saying, rules are made to be broken.
Yeah.
Well, that's, today's time in our society, you can get away with anything.
Oh, you're right about that. Well, the thing is, if you don't like it, take it to court. I mean,
that's
something we heard years ago, and now it's become so commonplace.
And if you're challenging the NCAA on a lot of their stuff that was sort of tradition or longstanding, you take it to court. You have a decent win loss record lately.
Oh, I had not seen.
Let me ask y'all one question. You know how many Alabama judges and lawyers have got Alabama connections?
Most, I would say. Well, a substantial number, I would say, a much higher percentage than any other school does.
If Bediako wins, though, Spectre, it's not just going to be a boon for Alabama. Like, you think about the number of college basketball players that suddenly regain their eligibility or suddenly have a case to regain their eligibility.
Yep.
The precedent that Bediako could set is not just, oh, that's great news for Alabama basketball. It's a pretty seismic shift for college athletics as a whole.
I would say any player who is in the G League that fits in the five-year NCAA window now, because that's one of the things they're arguing is that Bediako's in the five-year window. Now, we'll see if that one holds up. I mean, it's being challenged, you know, by Joey Aguilar and Trinidad Chambliss and others. But, I mean, this particular case would deal more with the ability to sign a pro contract and then be able to come back. So any player who is in the G League that has eligibility left as far as his time, his clock from the time he entered college, or is in the NBA and has the same, would be able to come back to college. I think it's really interesting. I had not seen this. I was on the way here in the last 15 minutes. Ross Dellinger reporting that Greg Sankey has urged the court
awoken from his slumber.
Yes, he really has. He has urged the court to uphold NCAA eligibility standards and prevent Charles Bediako from playing, citing policies that he said, quote, are essential to the integrity of college sports. Now, there is one of the most listened to voices in college athletics, and Greg Sankey. We wondered why had we not heard anything from him. And here on the eve of that hearing tomorrow, Greg Sankey, in a groundbreaking affidavit, according to Ross Dellinger, and I'll get it when we get a chance. We'll try to take a look at that affidavit filed by the SEC commissioner.
One last question: how many games has he played since
he's played
back?
Four, and Alabama's gone 2-2.
All right. If some judge rules against him, then they'll forfeit those games he played in, right?
Maybe, and that. You know, I mean, because the NCAA has been steadfast in saying he is ineligible, so they may very well have to forfeit those two wins.
Yeah, although the NCAA, part of that was like the TRO because of the like weather, right? Like the thing got extended. I wonder if the NCAA would make them forfeit the two games. If this is the end for Bediako, I wonder if the NCAA would make them forfeit the two games.
If they win, they may just be happy to take that win.
Hey, the rules are the rules. They're made to be broken.
Yep.
It is interesting that, appreciate it, Spectre. It is interesting that Sankey feels compelled to offer something and go against. I think is it a little surprising that in this case he's kind of like it's the NCAA against an SEC member institution, and you don't know exactly what Sankey's going to do, and it's not just any SEC member institution, it's Alabama.
That's right.
And he is in fact staying he's going what's the mobster way to say this? He's going against the family, right? Like he's going with the NCAA.
Yeah, but maybe for the he feels it's for the best of the family to not allow something like this to happen. Yes, it's a pretty lengthy affidavit filed by Greg Sankey. It opens with, "I am the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference. I make this declaration of my own personal knowledge, and if called on to do so, could testify competently to the facts stated herein under oath." But he goes on, and he brings up his initial statement in the affidavit is the NCAA's 5 years to play four. And then he goes on to quote the NCAA bylaw, which deals with student athletes, quote, "shall not enter into any kind of agreement to compete in professional athletics, either orally or in writing, regardless of the legal enforceability of that agreement." Now, that's interesting, regardless of the legal enforceability of that agreement. So it's like that is what the players, the schools, the athletics departments, the administrations that belong to the NCAA have agreed upon. And that's what Greg Sankey says must not, that must not be disallowed.
Yeah, and he's sort of explaining, like, in his capacity as commissioner, like, why some of these rules exist,
right,
and why it's important to uphold them. We'll see how important Greg Sankey's voice is in this.
I would think this is a pretty important statement.
I also wonder if he would have. Well, I guess there's two thoughts on that. Like, would he have offered something like this if he thought the NCAA was going to lose the Bediako thing in court?
I don't know.
It would make things kind of.
I don't know. It seems like the feeling over the last 24 hours, especially when the judge said, "Nope, we're not extending this. It's going to be held as originally scheduled on February 6th." Seems like the feeling is trending more toward the NCAA and away from Charles Bediako's camp.
Yeah, I mean, I found the Pavia arguments a little bit more compelling when I remember, like, the
a
argument.
A little.
But a couple years ago when Pavia was challenging this to get his extra year.
But that was all about I didn't get a chance to make money because I was in the junior college ranks and not in the NCAA.
You know,
that's not what it should be all about.
The argument that I found interesting that Pavia made was, why do you differentiate junior college from prep school when prep schools can play junior colleges and you count one of them against your
eligibility? Well, because when you graduate from prep school, and you enter college, aren't you a freshman?
You can get college credit at some.
You
of
can
these
get
prep
college
schools,
credit.
I think that was part of the argument.
But
was
if you graduate from prep school, you're not a junior like you would like you are coming out of junior college.
You're taking college classes in junior college, but I think the argument would be you have the option to take some of these college classes at a lot of those prep schools that they offer.
Yeah, like the option to take those in high school.
I know.
So what? That doesn't cut into your eligibility.
But they were saying that and Pavia won with those arguments.
I know
these Bediaco ones are. Again, even as someone who saw like the daylight Pavia was arguing.
This is a rule that has been set there to differentiate and to say we are not aligned. We are not professional. We're not accepting players who have played at the top level here that players hope to attain one day.
And if Bediaco wins, it does seem like it blows some
huge holes in the NCAA.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. 334-321-1390. Love for you to join in here on the Thursday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive. With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Looking.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio.
So, I mean, and we talked a lot of the Bediaco stuff, and if you still want to talk about that, that's totally fine. I want to hear about.
Yeah, there's a lot more to be concerned about than Charles Bediaco for Saturday for Auburn.
That's what I mean. I want to hear about Golish and yesterday's football hullabaloo. But we're talking basketball, and it's a huge game on Saturday. And I think
it's a huge game for both teams. I really think, but more for Auburn than Alabama because it is at Neville Arena. Auburn, can't afford to lose another home game. They'll go 5-5 in the conference and 14. Would this be their ninth loss? I guess they're 14-8.
I think Bama has 9 losses, don't they? Or are they both 14-8?
I think their record's almost identical. Okay. Let's see.
I'll get that for you.
Bama's 15-7.
Okay.
Bama's 15-7.
Oh, it was going into last night. That's right.
Yeah,
they had the possibility.
14-7 before last night. And Alabama just got over 500 last night. Both teams 5-4 in
league
play. Both
teams 5-4
in
the league. Yeah.
And now just two games out of first after Texas A&M dropping that ball game, and A&M's got Florida Saturday at home. So one of those teams is going to have 3 losses. So a win, as frustrating and up and down as things have been, a win for either the winner of this ball game. It's going to be, a game out of second and staying just 2 games out of first place.
I don't know how many losses you probably need to have in conference play before you think, like, okay, well, the hopes of finishing in first place start getting remote. I don't know how many more you can absorb.
Not a whole lot. I'd say a couple more at the – no. 4 losses now, I don't know that you could expect to win the conference with more than 5 losses.
What do you think the record's going to be of the SEC champion?
I think Florida has the best shot of
going 7-2 right now.
7-2, and I would say I wouldn't be surprised to see them 14-4. Maybe 15-3, 4, but they're the team that I think. I mean, Texas A&M's schedule is much tougher in the second half than the first half, so it's going to be difficult for them to match that 7-2 mark.
Yeah, so I would say if you're a team that already has 4 or 5 conference losses, you probably can't lose too many more.
No,
of them
if you've got 5
like
losses, you probably I don't know that you can afford another loss and be able to think that you're going to be able to try to win the conference regular season.
And if you're at 4, you're probably at the brink as far as
you're
championship.
At 4, you absolutely can't lose a home game. You because that means you have to go unbeaten for the rest of the year. And win more on the road than you do at home.
And you say that as with Auburn and Alabama both really 2 back in the loss column of first place, right?
But crazy. I mean, you've got 11 teams that are 10 teams, I guess, that are within 2 games of each other. First to 10th is only separated by 2 games.
There's a lot of teams that feel like if they play well over the next 4, over the next 6, over the next 8, maybe they could be one of those teams in first place, or the only team in first place at the end of the regular season in SEC. That's true of Auburn or Alabama, but I feel like they would need to get extremely hot between now and the end of February for that to happen. But both of those teams are capable of doing it. Like, I mean,
it seems
like something of a long shot for Auburn now. Beat Alabama and Vanderbilt. in back-to-back games and go from 5-4 to 7-4 with two of your tougher opponents left vanquished, go to Arkansas and win, right? And I mean, you're talking about 8-4 with six left, and you're in the thick of it. Lose these three, and it's
you're not going to win the conference. Then the good thing for Auburn,
play your way out of the bubble,
and Alabama is their strength of schedule.
Yes,
they have, as Stephen Pearl pointed out today, these teams have the two toughest strength of schedules in the nation. So I mean, that's going to help you who you've played. Now,
it would take a lot, I think, for either of those teams to play their way out of the NCAA tournament picture. I think it's possible because the caliber of competition they have left, the strength of schedule and the teams they played in the non-con will help both of these teams in that regard. Auburn's got some really good looking wins. St. John's, NC State are both teams that are winning conference games right now. Now that you've got into
the win in Gainesville,
is Florida
is huge. But you can't afford to give that up by losing again at home. So, you know, they look right now, you've got to look at the first two games that you played in conference, Georgia and Texas A&M, and go, man, if we had those, you'd be in great shape. But you don't. So you've got to get out there and play. And we were talking during the break. Look, Auburn's had a week off. Stephen Pearl talked about him getting healthier. Sway talked about Auburn getting healthier. They should be as healthy as they've been in a while. We didn't realize that Keyshawn Hall had stitches in his finger that he kept shaking the other day against Tennessee. So Auburn should be healthy. Alabama would be playing its third game in 7 days. So that should be a big advantage for Auburn, in addition to the crowd and the atmosphere at Neville. All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Going to check in with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer when we come back. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio while we're efforting Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. Want to also add into the game day men's health spot that was that you just heard a minute ago. They're open till 5. If you have any questions, they're extremely helpful. They will walk you through everything they have. Talk to you about it. 209-3706 is the number there at Game Day Men's Health. We're here in the studio going to check in with our buddy Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on the Thursday Drive. Ferg, how you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are y'all?
All right. We've obviously, excited and, you know, looking forward to the crowd, the atmosphere, and then the game Saturday afternoon over at Neville Arena. The matchup of Auburn and Alabama. This sounds crazy because a few years ago, the opposite would have been true. It's hard to believe neither team is ranked heading in, where just, 10 years ago, it wasn't very likely that both teams were going to be ranked.
I remember previewing with both of you guys. I remember previewing the first time there was ever an SEC. It was both teams were in the top 25 at Neville Arena.
Yeah.
It was groundbreaking stuff. You know,
and we got to the point where it was number one versus number two.
And so it is a little bit, I guess, jarring would be the word. I mean, I obviously every season is very different in college basketball, but from from where it's been and where it was very recently.
It's not like both teams are in the pits, though. Or
still,
you know,
a huge
both teams
game.
Are terrible.
Still
or
a huge game,
any.
But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a game that obviously means a lot, you know, to these programs for what it is for the rivalry. But I think it's going to mean a lot for these teams, and you know, course of where they are with the, you know, their NCAA tournament resume, their push to try to be one of the better teams in the SEC this year. So, yeah, even though they don't have the little numbers next to their names, I mean, it's still a monster game. ESPN, you know, calling. I mean, I'm at practice right now. I've been walking around the concourse and just looked outside and for the first time and noticed, you know, just how many tents are already up for this. So they got the whole camping out thing in full swing set up there already. So it's good. It should be an awesome atmosphere on Saturday, and obviously a game that means so much because, you know, you don't get a ton of quad one opportunities at home, but this is one of them. If you're Auburn, and you know, you for Alabama, this could mean a ton for their season if they could go on the road and get a win against a team like Auburn.
Curious to know sort of the physical state of the team. You know, there were a couple of, I mean, the Keyshawn Hall hand, the Kevin Overton head injury. You know, it seemed like it was a good time for this team to have a bye week. What's your sense of how they're feeling going into Saturday?
Yeah, it was a perfect time for an off date. Obviously, Auburn was able to rest those guys up. Keyshawn Murphy missed some time earlier this week at practice, but is back out there today and is full go. Keyshawn Hall, yeah, had stitches in his finger, you know, during that Tennessee game, played through it. Obviously, it was affecting him some towards the end of that game. He's got those stitches out. He's full go. Kevin Overton's back to 100%. He's been good this week, you know, getting a little bit of time off of things definitely helped him. So yeah, I mean, this is a good time for Auburn to get that break, and, you know, get rested and healthy. One of the most interesting, I think, facts about this game coming up on Saturday is because the fact Alabama played on Sunday and not Saturday against Florida, that means Alabama's played twice the last time since the last time Auburn's played. So, I mean, I think for Auburn, not only are you going to be the home team, but you should be the more rested team and the more recovered team because, you know, Alabama's busy week for Alabama, having to play, you know, three really tough games in 7 days. And meanwhile, Auburn got a full week to prepare for this one.
Yeah, and Stephen Pearl today talking about, you know, work – practicing, working on Auburn on Monday and a little bit on Tuesday, and then getting yesterday off, which is something it's very rare during the season for players to get a day off. Sway was seemed you know, pretty excited and pretty fresh after getting a day off yesterday. But that's that should be a big advantage. But then on the other hand, Auburn, even though Stephen corrected Brian to say eight, I mean, Auburn basically is playing seven. Against Alabama's 9 or 10.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll see if that's 9 or 10 because of the Bediako stuff. Yep. Well, apparently Sankey coming out and saying something about that today.
Yeah, that was part of the NCAA's response. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out because that's something that could swing some things, maybe, but we'll see. But, yeah, yeah, for Auburn, I think you just, you know what you're going to get out of Alabama, you know, on Saturday. They're going to play fast. They're going to be a little bit deeper than you, for sure. And so I think the big thing for Auburn is they got to play their brand of ball. They don't need to get into a track meet with Alabama. They don't need to get into a free throw shooting contest. I mean, a three-point shooting contest with Alabama. They need to get back to playing their kind of ball, which is limiting possessions, maximizing their half-court opportunities and playing really good defense, not turning the ball over, not giving them, you know, kind of live ball scoring opportunities to get out in transition. So that's something that, you know, I thought, you know, Auburn didn't play a bad game at Tennessee, but they did kind of get out of their groove somewhat. I think Tennessee had something to do with it with the way they play, especially on the defensive end. But I did think Auburn kind of lost a little bit of what makes them a really good team in that game. And so that Alabama's not the team to do that against. You got to get back to, you know, really the style of play, like Sway said today, style of play that, you know, got you that win against Florida. You need to bring that every game. You know, it definitely would be a big time matchup to do that against, you know, Alabama, because I think that's a thing where if you play your brand of game against Alabama, you're in a much better spot because you don't want to play their brand of basketball.
It's crazy to think of the seven guys that make up the bulk of Auburn's rotation. I don't want to make the same mistake Brian did. So I'll just say, you know, the seven guys playing the lion's share of the minutes, you know, none of those guys were on the team when Aiden Holloway
was on the team.
That's true. Yeah.
So it'll be like, you know, and so it's still a bit of a homecoming for Aiden because you're facing your former team. I'm sure he remembers. I'm sure a lot of the folks in Neville Arena will remember the fact that Aiden Holloway once played for Auburn, but it is crazy to think, like, yeah, he's facing his former team, but none of his former teammates.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of crazy, you know, to think about that. Yeah, for Aiden Holloway, I think he's had, you know, a really good year. He had some big shots last night against Texas A&M to help him get that win at home. You know, and I thought Stephen Pearl had a really good point today where he's just talking about, he's like, yeah, we always knew this was going to be, you know, Aiden. He just had a tough freshman season. He's a really, really good player. He does, you know, is just a very, very talented guy. And he just so happened to go to Alabama instead, where I think, you know, that system works for him really, really well. Mm-hmm. Really kind of maximizes his ability to play, you know, his kind of basketball. And so he's been a key piece for him this year. Obviously, the Baron Filon's been kind of the big thing. That's the other one, you know. Auburn never had Filon on their team, but they had a commitment from him at one point. So very, very familiar with, obviously, the two guards are going to make a lot of that stuff go on Saturday for Alabama.
We obviously we're talking about the Bediako situation, and love to get your thoughts when Stephen made his comments about Bediako, you know, saying he sort of feels for the young man.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to look at it. Kind of, I think it's a very human, you know, way to look at it that I think kind of gets lost in a lot of this sometimes. You know, I think even though we can all sit here and talk about how crazy it is that, you know, Bediako's getting this opportunity and that, you know, he's, you know, this has worked out so far. But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, he made a good point. It's like, you don't want to set the kid up to fail. You know, he's, you know, it took a lot for him to probably, you know, drop back down here and admit, you know, hey, it didn't work out for me in the NBA. I made a mistake and, you know, I'd like to come back to, you know, college ball if I can. And obviously they made all the movement to try to make that happen. But, you know, what happens if that gets ripped away from you? That's got to be tough, right? And so I thought that was very much, you know, that's kind of a very much a, you know, player coach mentality. Mm-hmm. I think we can all look at it from the outside and see how crazy it is, how ridiculous, you know, it is, might be to be in this spot. But I did think that was a very interesting and refreshing perspective because, yeah, I mean, behind it all, there is a human that is just trying to play basketball and make money for his family. And, you know, whether we believe that it should be happening here or not, the fact of the matter is that there's like some, you know, there's some real human stuff at stake here. I think we lose sight of that from time to time.
Yeah, yeah, you had the sense last year when Auburn would face teams and the fan bases would feel like those guys are still, they're still here, they're still mm-hmm. around college basketball. Because you had some Auburn players take advantage of the COVID year, or the extra year of eligibility through junior college, whatever. With this Alabama team, like, it does feel like there are multiple. I mean, if Bediako's allowed to play on Saturday, between Bediako and Reitzel and Houston Millett, like you've got several players on Alabama's rotation that you thought, like, okay, we can close the book. Like, their college basketball career has ended. And it's like, well, not so fast. Like, they're actually, you know, they found that, you know, they found the secret passageway back to the sport. And those are three significant players who could be big factors on Saturday, depending on how much they depending on if all three are allowed to play and depending on how much they actually play.
Yeah, now, of course, it has been pointed out here on the show that there are some opportunities for Charles if things don't work out. I mean, there is still plenty of international ball that's not the not the kind of international ball that Filip Jović was playing, that he would have an opportunity to make pretty good money for a while, as so many players have in the past.
Yeah, I just think it's very obvious that, you know, getting to play in the United States is the ultimate goal and, you know, obviously a preferred option for those guys. And so when I'm sure that was proposed to him as a way to get back, he was going to try to do it. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like, here's my whole take on it. This is, you know, I think it's ridiculous, but if I'm a coach, you know, I'm not surprised that other coaches are doing that because I think, you know, if you give them the opportunity, you're going to take advantage of these rules. And I think Steven said something like that when the Bediako thing first came up. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the door got kicked open, obviously, with some other guys, some earlier guys, like, you know, James and Johnny earlier this year. But yeah, I mean, it's just it's one of those things where you know, until there's some clear stopping to it, this is just going to keep happening.
It was pointed out to me by somebody texting in that Reitzel and Millett each had 4 threes in the A&M game last night. I mean, these are two of the massive pieces for Alabama, and
they got a lot of guys that can hit multiple threes.
Yeah, Bama hit 16 threes in the win over A&M, and I would think that a huge part of their plan Saturday involves being able to get different players open from deep and find guys who can and convert those looks.
Yeah, they shot 48 of them last night, which is absurd to think about in a 40-minute basketball game. Yes. that you're averaging more than one 3-point attempt a minute in a game like that. But they're averaging over 40 a game over their last three, and they've hit, I think it's like at least 14 in the last three. So it's a key part of what they do. They are one of a handful of teams in college basketball that are shooting more threes than twos this season. I read something earlier this week that was like, that's only happened in major college basketball like only a couple times ever. I think there's like 7 or 8 teams that are doing that right now. It's for Auburn. It's just, this is the real challenge there. You've got to be able to defend. You've got to be able to get out and defend and play smart, y'all on the perimeter, and don't let their movement, what they do, get those easy looks from beyond the arc. They're going to take them if they're easy or if they're difficult, but you can't let them, get the easy ones, over time. And we know, this Auburn defense has gotten better over the course of SEC play, but 3-point defense has kind of been a little bit of a weakness for them in some of these recent games. So they're going to have to come out and get off to a better start than the way they have been the last couple of games defending the 3-point line, because, it's just, that's what they're going to do. It is very much an analytical approach, which is, if we take enough threes, we're going to make enough to really sink you as a team, because, we'll just make up for it in volume. So it's definitely something they got, and pretty much everybody who touches the floor for them, for the most part, is going to be gifted enough to take it out there from deep.
Yeah, and that puts really the pressure on the Auburn guards. And again, Auburn is deeper in the front court than they are back court. They can't afford anybody to get in foul trouble, and my goodness, an injury.
Yeah, no, you need those guys healthy. It was good to get Overton back to 100%.
Oh, yeah.
I think, again, with Tahad Pettiford, we all know he has not shot the ball well this year. He's struggling there. But I do think he has improved as a defender this season. I think he's going to be a big weapon out there. So is KO. I'd watch for Elijah Freeman in this game. If he can sit down and defend and be the impactful defender he's shown that he can be this season, that's a guy you'd love to put on LeBaron foul on and really kind of go to work there with them. So, yeah, for Auburn, it's just – you got to do a good job of defending. I thought one of the things that helped Alabama out last night is they got to the line a decent bit more than A&M did. That ended up helping them a ton. We know Auburn loves to get to the free throw line. So that's a big thing there. And, I keep going back to it, as I think for Auburn, it's just, you got to play your brand of basketball and not get drawn into playing Alabama's brand, where it's got to be a track meet and it's going to be played, from the key to, playing from the top of the key to the top of the key. You want to make this a rim to rim game. And, one of the big things I'm really keeping an eye on in this one, Auburn's one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. Alabama's one of the worst defensive rebounding teams in the country. If Auburn can, might not be able to shoot as well as Alabama, but if they can get extra opportunities and get to the free throw line that way and really grind this game down, I think Auburn at its best is a more physical team than this Alabama team is. So they need to play to that and not get into a point where, okay, Alabama's going to start running and gunning. You feel like you have to keep up that way.
Justin, real quick, tell everybody how they can find the work you do at The Observer.
Yep, auburnobserver.com. Check it out there. $6 a month or $60 a year. We'll have a podcast out tomorrow previewing the Auburn-Alabama game. And basketball, got a mailbag, talking some football as well from what we got this week from Alex Golish. Had a story yesterday on everything we learned from the coaches. Had a story this morning on the running game and how big that is. We talked about the bracket projections earlier this week. So a ton of stuff at The Observer. We'll have plenty over the weekend with Auburn and Alabama basketball. So check it out, auburnobserver.com. Sign up there. Everything we do gets sent straight to your email inbox. You sign up tonight, you get two things tomorrow morning. So good time to jump on board.
Appreciate it, Ferg.
Yep, appreciate y'all.
All right, we will get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us as, let's see, we got David Paschal. We'll be a little late getting him. He said they've got a remote, so we'll catch him a little after 5 this afternoon. Stick with us here on The Drive.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
It's almost time. Don't miss the 9th annual Crew de Tigres Mardi Gras Parade in downtown Auburn.
Online.
That's going to do it for hour number one of The Drive. Again, David Paschal joins us from Chattanooga in a few minutes. So stick with us. Should fun hour number one, and we're right back with hour number two.
Keep in mind.
Oh, yeah, and we've got a short hour.
That's right. The Auburn women's basketball team in Gainesville.
Against the, that's right. They've tonight, got the Gators tonight, 6 o'clock tip.
Going for the sweep. Beat Florida earlier this year and looking for the sweep of the Gators. That's we'll have that for you here on ESPN 106.7. At the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, so we've got about another 40 minutes to go here. Stick with us. We're right back with hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two here on this Thursday. Bill and Dan here in the studio. We'll get to your calls in a little while. Fun first hour as we talked a good bit about the Auburn-Alabama basketball matchup coming up this Saturday over at Neville Arena, where we already have quite a few students that are camping out. In the chilly, chilly weather, at least it's not raining.
Yeah, layer up, guys. Make sure you make it plainly clear to your delivery driver where you are.
Really? Yeah, I wonder. Nobody asked Steven, if he's handing out pizzas or anything this year.
I think he can just make the call and send the professionals. I think it's an excellent gesture from Steven to just make the call and send the professionals there with the pizza distributing. Materials and stuff. No, we did that a couple years ago.
Yeah,
the pictures live on in infamy of me and my in my little Hungry Howie's hat dishing out pizzas to the students around in Bruce World. No, but it's very cool to see the camping tradition live on and hopefully everyone's staying safe and staying warm tonight and tomorrow night. They're in the lead up to the Iron Bowl of basketball.
I wonder. It's funny, Stephen. We talked about it a little while ago. Stephen Pearl saying he kind of hopes that Charles Bediako is playing because he sort of feels for the young man and what's he going to do. Situation. I wonder how many Auburn fans, how many of those students probably are hoping that Bediako plays just so that they can let him know how they feel.
They can heckle. You know what? Even if he's not allowed to play, I imagine there will be they'll be voicing some of that.
Sure, they're probably a. There's a sign or two or
no, it'll
something.
Be it's a huge and it's like I think Auburn would be if just about anybody in the top half of the SEC were coming to Auburn this Saturday, it would feel like a really, really big game coming off of that loss.
Feels like forever since Auburn's played now.
Yeah.
Since they had the midweek off. It's crazy that so many teams had the midweek off. Only two games last night.
And a good one. That Bama A&M game, was one of the had that first place team in action getting challenged against an Alabama team that had their backs against the wall, and
that was a must win for Alabama at home, and I feel like Saturday's a must win for Auburn at home.
That's what it feels like, absolutely.
All right, we're going to check in with David Paschal from Chattanooga here momentarily. We'll get his thoughts on some of the, I guess. It's tough when you're talking as much about what's going on in the court as you are on the court. But as speaking of Charles Bediako, the NCAA today, found out when the judge there in Tuscaloosa said, no, the hearing is not going to, TRO is not going to be extended. Hearing is going to be tomorrow. And in the filing by the NCAA, it includes an affidavit from SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey asking the judge to uphold the NCAA saying, you know, talking about how these eligibility questions could disrupt and really cause harm to the future of college athletics. And I think that was a surprise to some people that the SEC commissioner would come out and be in opposition to an SEC school that is trying to bring back a player in Charles Bediako.
Took sides against the family, Bill. I don't know. Alabama's never going to forget that.
Oh, now, I guarantee you there's some Alabama fans that are wondering about
it. I think
this.
It's interesting if that was something the NCAA wanted Sankey to contribute
to
the court hearing. If it was something Sankey thought, well, you know, the NCAA is in position to win this thing and I should, you know, offer my support behind it if it's something.
I hope he thought this is the right thing to do
right
and
thing
did
to
it.
Do, yeah.
Because I think it is. And let's get to the Drive Hotline. Welcome in our good friend from Chattanooga. Just wrapped up his show out on location today on WGOW. And, of course, a longtime writer for the Chattanooga Times Free Press, David Paschal, joining us here on the Thursday Drive. David, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Hope you guys are doing well.
Yeah, before we get into Charles Bediako and stuff, I know David knew Philip.
Oh, absolutely!
And this is our first time getting to chat with him since we got the news on Friday about Philip Marshall. And Bill, you earlier this week, you were up there remembering our pal. But that's someone David that I know you had plenty of interactions with yourself.
Yeah, Dan, thank you because I was going to bring that up before we got into anything as well. I mean, Philip covered Auburn when I was an Auburn student. And, you know, my last 3 years at Auburn, 87, 88, 89, I actually graduated in August of 89, but I stayed down there and worked in the sports information office. So obviously dealt with a lot of Philip, and that was just really fun going week to week. And it was Mike Marshall and Mike Easterling. It was a great group of beat writers.
And they were both there, you know, by the way, David. They were both there, and iron spoke at Philip's services.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, just an absolute institution. I mean, you'll never forget his voice. I mean, I still go back to when Tupperville was coach, and I can still hear Philip say, "Hey, Tommy," you know, and asking him a question. And, you know, and he would come up when Chattanooga hosted the women's basketball tournament. I mean, he didn't just cover football. He covered everything. And so when the SEC was up here in Chattanooga from 93 to 2000. I mean, Philip came up most years, and it was always great catching up with him then. And just an incredible. I mean, I don't know how else to describe him other than an Auburn institution. I mean, I was blessed to work for David Housel when he was sports information director, and of course, he went on to become AD. I mean, I consider him an Auburn institution. But yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that you had someone who loved what he did for that long at the same place.
And kept that same, I mean, he still had that same drive and wanted to let you know the personalities of the athletes. I mean, he was somebody really cared about who they were and was a great storyteller. And David, it was a great celebration of Philip up in Decatur. And what it became was eight different folks got up and told stories about one of the best storytellers that we've ever known.
You know, and like I said, when I first met him, I was an Auburn student. I mean, and he at the time, you know, he was a big old guy, and I was just a little college student, and I mean, he at first had an intimidating presence,
yep.
But that went away pretty quickly once you got to know him. I mean, he just became as big of a teddy bear as anybody and was as genuine. And there was an opportunity for me about 12 or 13 years ago to actually go down to Auburn and work down there. But with the newspaper and the radio here, it just made more sense because I was just getting the radio thing going. But I talked to Philip about it, and he was very helpful for me, weighing kind of the pros and the cons of that. So, yeah, Philip was just fantastic, and it was just great knowing him for as long as I did. He's just one of those guys that I could go a year or two without seeing and just pick right up, you know, because, you know, I would cover Georgia a lot, and then I moved over to Tennessee, and obviously Tennessee and Auburn don't play each other every year like Georgia and Auburn do. So in the last few years, I didn't see Philip as much, but he was a guy that, you know, you just pick up wherever you left off the last time you saw him.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and what a tremendous void there is right now, and it's going to take multiple people to fill that void.
You know, but it's interesting that you say that because, I mean, yeah, Phillip was always going to leave a void. But when you think about the Jason Caldwells and the Brian Matthews and even Justin, and sure. I mean, you know, you've got some people now that have been on that beat for a while, and they're really good, likable dudes. I mean, they're people I've always gotten along with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no question about it. But as you said, one thing that was a little different about Phillip is he would cover the non-revenue sports. I mean, he really got into, you know, softball, and Auburn was, you know, they had that supernova there for a little bit, and things haven't been as well, but he didn't give up on that either. He continued to cover that and try to cover, you know, the complete spectrum of Auburn athletics, which is something rather unusual.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's funny you say that because I wrote a Tennessee baseball article, and it's mm-hmm. the first one I've written in a while, and I'm sitting up on Lookout Mountain and it's 28 degrees and I'm like, it actually feels really good to write a baseball article.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Phillip got that same kind of pleasure. I mean, it's like, you know, football is king at Auburn, football's king in the SEC. But you know, there are other sports and there's so many great stories to write about. And Phillip was always great at seeking them out. And to me, that's one of the most fun things of what we do. I mean, yes, football is my favorite sport, but I love the fact that what we do is seasonal. And I just like, you know, and it's funny, of course, the Betty Ako thing is in season, but we're dealing with the Joey Aguilar story.
Yep.
And it's just kind of a pain in the neck, right? And it's, again, we have metrics, and these football stories do better than any other sport we write about, and I get all that. But I'm also kind of one of those that likes to write about whatever's in season. You know, I don't want to write a ton of football stories in January. I want to write about – or February. I want to write about basketball. I want to write about the start of baseball. I want to write about a little bit of everything. So, but I really like writing about whatever's in season, and I love the fact we get to do that.
Oh, you're right. Talking with David Pascal from Chattanooga. Well, the courts are in season. I mean, you're right, David. I mean, we can't get away from it. There are challenges and players and their representation are challenging. I have some people say, why aren't there rules? There are rules, and they're black and white. Those are the rules, but they're just, it appears now that at, any opportunity, if you don't like the rules, go ahead and take them to court.
And I thought the NCAA had a very fair statement yesterday about the Aguilar ruling, just saying that, you know, these are colleges that created these rules,
right,
and now want to challenge them. And you're right, it is just maddening when you think about all this. And of course, you know, the Aguilar situation's like a perfect sequel to the Betty Ako situation because, I mean, this was it was a Tuscaloosa circuit court judge that, mm-hmm. that allowed Betty Ako, and now you've got a Knox County Chancery Court that ruled in favor of Aguilar. And so, yeah, I mean, it's like the NCAA's message said, you get a situation, especially in Aguilar, because he was originally attached to the Pavia federal lawsuit, but he peels off so he can have this thing in Knoxville.
And now, you know, amid all of that, you try to get ready for a basketball game, right? I mean, it's still a game that's got huge ramifications for Auburn's season, right? Beyond whatever happens in the courtroom tomorrow for Charles Betty Ako, like it's a game that it would be, you know, it would feel great to win for Stephen Pearl, and a loss could scramble could scramble things moving forward a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, I mean, I get it. It's a unique case. I don't think anybody's really happy about a guy going to the G League and coming back. It's just never been, this stuff that we're witnessing's never been done before. But, you know, Auburn can definitely beat Alabama with Betty Ako. I mean, you saw what Florida did, and you saw what Auburn did to Florida. So, I mean, on any given day, and I would imagine an Auburn win over Betty Ako would be all the sweeter. I mean, you are talking about a guy who, it's interesting just watching him because he's always been good, but he's always, you know, he's got limitations. I mean, you look at his, because I was in Knoxville the other night, and it was just kind of an interesting dynamic in that Tennessee played without Felix Okpara, who's that tall, lanky, shot-blocking menace like a Betty Okko can be. But instead, you know, Tennessee goes with Jalen Carey and Dwayne Brown, who Stephen Pearl, because I asked him the question, and he's like, those were a couple of SEC defensive ends we had to deal with. And, you know, Tennessee, all these schools after game, you know, they provide so many photos for you after a game. And I was staggered by the photos that Tennessee provided, because so many of them were either Carey or Brown going up for the layup, and another one was right there to get the rebound. I mean, these, you know, the Auburn players were having a difficult time getting around these big bodies. So, you know, Auburn can definitely take it to Alabama with Betty Okko. But I mean, yeah, he does make Alabama better. There's no question.
Yeah. And then, I mean, well, you see different styles. Some teams just match up better with other teams. Steven was lamenting today the fact that he felt that Auburn got a little, I wouldn't say gun shy, but more, you know, had a couple of things go against them when they went toward the basket and started to kick it out. And that's not Auburn's game anymore. Not this year. It's a team that has struggled shooting threes. They are better when they are physical inside, the way they were down in Gainesville. Now, I mean, so that's what one of the things that's really interesting about this year's SEC basketball. Look, it's not last year. I mean, you still have some really good teams, but a lot of the times people are surprised at the outcomes, but it's based on the matchup. Some teams just match up better against others, and different styles seem to fit. It's going to be a really interesting battle between Auburn and Alabama, because if Alabama has their way, it's going to be up-tempo, as many possessions as you can get. Auburn is going to want to slow it down, pound it inside, and see if they can do what Tennessee did to them, go back to getting offensive rebounds and second opportunities.
What is that, a late afternoon tip?
3 o'clock our time, so 4 o'clock Eastern.
Okay. You know, and there's sometimes I wish, I'm glad that one's where it is. There's sometimes I wish the SEC could adjust its schedule once the season starts, because I think, if I'm not mistaken, that you've got two games Saturday at 7:30 Central, mm-hmm. where Tennessee's at Rupp Arena. That's a big game.
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got Florida, Texas A&M, which I also think is at 7:30. I hate that you've got two games of that magnitude at 7:30. I know you got the Duke Carolina game that leads into mm-hmm. Tennessee Kentucky, but yeah, I mean, you throw in the Iron Bowl, and I mean, this is a monster Saturday for SEC hoops.
Yeah, it really is. After, you know, after such a slight midweek with half the league getting the midweek off.
Right. And I guess they do that pretty quick now. So I would imagine just about everybody has had that break now, to where everybody will be guns blazing from here on out.
Yeah, I think because everybody in the league has played at least 9 games now. So
I think one thing you do need to look at is that Florida Texas A&M game, because I think that becomes, I mean, obviously these are the two teams at the top of the standing, so it's a big game. But if Texas A&M wins, even with them losing last night in Tuscaloosa, this is where you do have to pay attention to this scheduling down the stretch, because everybody plays three teams twice, and Texas A&M's three permanents this year are Oklahoma, LSU, and Texas, and they've already beaten Texas in Austin. Mm. So, I mean, Texas A&M gets a huge break with the scheduling.
Oh, there's no question about it. I mean, everybody's been saying, I mean, look, the second half of the schedule is tougher than the first half, but that's still a big, big advantage. The crazy thing is, you know, look at it and you just see 9 SEC teams are within 2 games of first place. I mean, the difference in first and ninth is just 2 games. So there's a lot to be playing for, huge jockeying, not just for position, but teams trying to fight and either stay in, get in, or, you know, solidify being in the NCAA tournament.
You know, and I think we're kind of watching, Bill, a repeat of what we saw in football. I mean, the SEC did not mm-hmm. have an elite, really truly elite football team this year. But when you're talking about like 5 through 15 and like those CFP standings, I mean, think how many teams were in that mix.
Oh, yeah.
When you're talking about like Ole Miss and Bama and Oklahoma and Vanderbilt and Texas, you know, when you're talking about kind of that stretch run. And it, you're witnessing kind of the same thing in basketball. If you look at like Lenardi's latest bracket, I know he just had Florida bump up to the 3 line, but before that, I think just about there, he had like 9 SEC teams, anywhere from a 4 seed to an 8, or playing in that 8-9 game. So they're all really bunched in there together.
And that's what we've seen thus far here through the season. So it's going to be a fun second half. I mean, there's no telling. I mean, just about anybody could finish anywhere from especially 3rd to 10th or 11th. I mean, it sure looks like, you know, Florida appears to be the class of the league, but A&M, as you said, has the schedule. So those two teams, it's going to be tough, you would think, for them to fall too far.
Yeah, and I mean, with this game being in College Station, and with, you know, so if Texas A&M were to win, you know, they'd own the tiebreaker from there on out against Florida because they don't play again. So, yeah, that becomes a huge early game. So, yeah, it is a lot of fun, and this is where – of course, this is where what we do for a living, we're about a month away from it becoming really chaotic, especially when you've got a situation at Auburn with Alex Golish and a new, you know, you do have the excitement of a new staff that's come in, but you've got the, you know, basketball is playing in the postseason, and then you've got the, you know, baseball and softball will be underway. And of course, the SEC baseball poll came out today, and of course, Auburn's, you know, what, predicted 5th, which is, you know, when you're 5th in the SEC, that means a whole lot's expected of you. I think Tennessee was right behind at 6th. And, of course, Tennessee's the only program in the country to go to the last 5 Super Regionals. So, I mean, it's going to be a fun year in baseball. I think 12 of the top 25 in the ESPN softball poll
right.
from the SEC. So this is kind of that potpourri time of year where all the college sports converge.
Yeah, no question. David, always great to be able to spend a little bit of time with you. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you've got going.
Absolutely. TimesFreePress.com for the articles and WGOW.com for Sport Talk, 2 to 5 Central each weekday.
Thanks again, David. Have a great weekend.
All right, Bill and Dan, you do the same.
See you, bud.
All right, we need to get to our first break. Again, don't forget a shortened edition of The Drive today because we have Auburn women's basketball from Gainesville coming up in about 15 minutes. So stick with us here on The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Venturi announcing a new collaborative
with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Thursday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Our thanks to David Pascal for joining us. As he does weekly from Chattanooga. And, of course, Justin Ferguson with us in hour number one. Again, we've got a shortened edition of the show today. Dan, you were down in Troy yesterday when we had an opportunity to spend some time with Alex Golish and both DJ Durkin and Joel Gordon.
Yeah, what'd you think of what Alex Golish had to say about sort of the plan so far since he took office?
I think the plan has gone pretty darn well. I can't imagine. And he mentioned a couple of times how he thought this would be a very interesting documentary to have run, what all they had to do with, I mean, dealing with players not knowing whether players are staying or going, and the players not being here in Auburn. He said, you know, it got to a point where when he did get a chance to talk to one of the players, he'd go, hey, dude, are you staying or are you leaving? I need to know so we can replace you if you're not going to be here. Not trying to put any pressure on him, but, I mean, dealing with that, knowing what your budget is, trying to figure, all right, what do we need? How can we afford to go get it? While you're trying to evaluate as many players as possible, it's just crazy to think of all the pieces that were in motion at the same time going on. And right now, I mean, when I look at the roster, I'm pretty impressed with what they've done. I mean, we'll see when they get out there and start practicing. I think it's going to be a really interesting spring. But he seemed pleased. I see where people that's the way it is on social media, people picking up on a couple of the statements he made. He seemed pretty pretty darn pleased with the offensive line. I asked him about the offensive line, and we talked to Joel Gordon about the offensive line. And one of the things he said after he talked about, you know, Cole Best and how that team was better after Cole Best was the center. Joel Gordon said the same thing, and bringing Cole Skinner in and experienced guys at tackle and really liking the pieces and having some young developmental guys. But then he said, we'll be praying for him, and we need your help praying too. Some people picked up on that and said, well, it's obvious Auburn's going to be terrible on the offensive line. We'll see. There's no question. The feeling is reinforced that, man, this guy just gets after it and is a tenacious. I mean, he knows what he needs to do, and he's cranking it every single day. I've been very impressed with him thus far.
Well, and the fact that he hasn't had to scramble at quarterback probably helps, right?
No,
I mean, you think about how much of, I mean, and look, and there were a lot of problems over 3 years with Hugh Freeze, but that first year,
that may have been the biggest problem.
Yeah,
I mean, people talk about the offensive line, but
no, and I think that first year, I mean, you didn't even have the quarterback. Like, you went through spring practice without the guy that ended up playing quarterback for you. Like, contrasting that with how familiar Alex Golish and Joel Gordon and Cody Burns and these receivers are with Byron Brown.
Yeah,
like,
and Tyler Hudanik with the system and with his center and a starting guard.
And yeah, I mean, you have a lot of eggs in the Byron Brown basket, but that's better than not having a basket, right?
They've had this guy for 3 years. It's not like all right, we're basing it on one, and he's played he's played some pretty decent teams, not just smaller schools either. He had a darn good game against Florida last year.
Hey, Bill, real quick, because we're about to take a break, and I'm not going to be here tomorrow. Sad to see the Auburn movie theater.
Oh yeah,
went
the
away,
AMC
right?
Theater's
yeah,
down.
Sad,
yeah.
Sad to see the yeah. AMC went away. You may remember the opening. I remember it.
I do.
I mean, I think it was the Star Wars prequel. I think it was that weekend.
I think it was.
And it was shortly before I got to town, but I have a lot of fond memories of that place.
Yeah.
And I will, it's sad they couldn't make it work. Glad you still have the one in Tigertown.
We need another one in the area.
Yeah, I mean, you still have the multiplex in Tigertown, which
I know,
AMC's thinking is.
I mean, the talk is there's going to be something else on the north side.
Yeah, sad to see that place go because I was. I have a lot of fond memories of seeing it. I saw the Batman sequel. I saw the Dark Knight there opening night, and it was a madhouse. Like it was absolutely like at midnight. Place was absolutely packed and you know, folks out the door, multiple screens of the movie playing, and just a lot of fun. So sad to see that place lost to history.
Oh yeah, you're right. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. A quick segment, and then we're turning things over for Auburn women's basketball against Florida down in Gainesville. So stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
Valentine's Day.
Welcome back into the drive. Final couple of minutes here on this Thursday. Not the kind of start you would like to the Auburn softball season as they go to North Florida and in a game that was shortened because North Florida had an 8-run lead after 5. Auburn loses 11-3 in their season opener.
It's a long season, though. You know what I mean?
It is.
You got time to straighten out the kinks. The problem is, once you get into conference play, it's the SEC.
That's right.
And you're playing.
It's like, you know, David was talking about SEC baseball, that 12 of the top 25 teams in college baseball are from the SEC. Not far off of that in softball as well.
And we're about to throw it to women's basketball, and you look in the SEC in women's basketball, and just real quick, Bill, the SEC has number 3 South Carolina, number 4 Texas, number 5 LSU, number 7 Vanderbilt, number 11 Oklahoma, number 13 Ole Miss, number 16 Kentucky, number 19 Tennessee, and number 21 Alabama currently in the top 25 in women's basketball. Auburn and Florida, two teams not in the top 25. Auburn looking for a third SEC win, though.
over a Florida team that's 1-8 in league play.
Yeah, so, and as you said, Auburn looking for a sweep over the Gators. So, yeah, that's coming up next. Again, you're headed to Muncie.
I'm off to Muncie. I've been tipped off about an old timey pizza and subs
place.
Who
gave you that tip? Was it Andy?
Someone I was in a fantasy league with a long time who knows the Mac. They told me about a pizza and sub place I got to try. So I'm looking forward to a quick trip for Troy and Ball State.
Well, have a good trip. We will be here tomorrow. Don and I will be here tomorrow, and then Dan will be back on Monday. But that's going to do it for the Thursday edition of The Drive. Auburn women's basketball is up next. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.